Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema. Season 2.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a bit of a self-suck here, mate, but I made the astute observation in January that the zone of interest is the film companion to Banksy's The Banality of the Banality of Evil. That shit got 9 likes and no fucking comments, but guess who, on the 21st of February, whilst talking to The Hollywood Reporter, said this: "The Zone of Interest is the best Holocaust movie I've witnessed since my own. It's doing a lot of good work in raising awareness, especially about the banality of evil." Now, I'm not comparing myself to the Berg of Spiel, but Jesus Christ, man. I want some credit for not doing anything, but at the same time comparing something to something else. God damn it.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Talk to Me. This is a 2022 film directed by Danny and Michael Philippou and stars Sophie Wilde, Miranda Otto and Joe Bird. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows: when a group of friends discover how to conjure spirits using an embalmed hand, they become hooked on the new thrill until one of them goes too far and unleashes terrifying supernatural forces. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
I let you in, you ruin things, you take over my mind, those eyes ain't mine. Talk to me, talk to me, talk to me, yes.
Come with me,
let me in,
and you will see,
let me in,
these words ain't mine.
We're gonna
chill your spine. Can't run from me.
Let me in.
1, 2, 3.
Let me in.
You're not alone.
Let me in.
I'm in your bones. Listen to me.
Let me in.
Then you are free.
Let me in.
The fun begins. Tasty sins.
Let me in.
I let you in. You ruin things. You take over my mind, those eyes ain't mine. Talk to me, talk to me, talk to me, yeah.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Danny and Michael Philippou turned down the chance to direct an unknown film in the DCEU in favour of having Talk to Me be their directorial film debut.
What's DCEU?
The DC Marvel equivalent. So you got your Supermans, you got your Batmans, you got your Aquamans, got your Wonder Womans.
What made them want to pick up the Philippou brothers for a DC film?
No, the Philippou brothers wanted to do Talk to Me instead of them doing an unknown film in that universe.
Yeah, but what I mean is, why did anyone that's producing DC films approach them to direct a film? Is it just because of their 7 million YouTube subscribers, nothing to do with talent?
I feel like it's that they're a known entity on YouTube. I don't know them. I don't tend to watch a lot of stuff on YouTube. But they've got a big following on YouTube. And I think they're fairly well known in Australia and further afield, time served in. I think their show's called Raka Raka or something
like
that.
It's Raka Raka. They do fake fails, which straight away makes me dislike them, because if it's fake, it means it's staged, which means you're getting hollow likes for hollow content. I think they do little horror shorts, which might be what opened up someone to, offering them a chance to do DCU. And now they're now going to be doing a Street Fighter film.
Oh, really?
Oof.
I love me some Street Fighter when I was a kid, the game, and I loved me the Jean-Claude Van Damme film way back in the day. I know it would be hot shit if I watched it now. But yeah, I mean, based on this, going in quite hard early doors, I don't think that they necessarily have the talents for doing a big studio film. I'd love to be proved wrong. I don't know their work on YouTube, so I'm open to be really incorrect about that. I might watch some of their stuff and think that's amazing, but for me, if based solely on this film, I'm not so sure.
Do you know one of them made a car watertight inside, then filled it up with water, and then got oxygen canisters sat in the car underwater. So water's not coming out the car. This is the car driving on the road, but the car itself is like a pool. He's underwater driving the car with oxygen. So can't really see the road. So really dangerous. I'm not a prune. I'm saying, you know, have fun. But these guys like literally got pulled over by the cops and almost arrested because they thought it'd be funny to put themselves in a car, fill it up with water, have oxygen canisters and drive around Adelaide.
I've got one question.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. For YouTube follows.
See, I might be showing my age here and I might be on a decline of being miserable old bastard, but I don't get it. I don't get it. I understand people showing talent on YouTube. Like I love Bo Burnham and he started off on YouTube. So again, I've already mentioned and I'll say it again, I'm more than happy to be proved wrong. But when someone is judged by their online presence on streaming things like YouTube, I sort of be like, is that enough? Is that enough? Is them doing them sort of quirky things like filling their car full of water and driving? It obviously gets people interested, but is that enough for a studio to...
I don't think so.
Stuff, but no. It seemingly is, and I can't wrap my old withered brain around that.
Bo Burnham's not the same though. He's got genuine musical talent, and you know he does a lot of his own work, films himself doing Inside. He did stand up. I'm not a fan of his stand up. I found it to be very moody.
Yeah,
like he's almost in a mood whilst doing it. But he's got a real talent, and I saw that when Inside came out. But I honestly believe, you know, this film's got a lot of high ratings.
Yeah.
So IMDb is like 8. I think Rotten Tomatoes is 95%, but I have a theory behind this. If you have 6-7 million fanboys on YouTube, that's 6-7 million people that would never give it less than 5 stars on these ratings critics websites because they've loved the channel and they want to be on the ground floor and say, I've been watching these guys for years. I've been watching Raka Raka for years. So the film's, I actually think the film's got almost like the Big Short. You know, when he's talking about the mortgages, they're not actually A's, they're C's.
Yeah.
I actually think this is, you know, not. It's a very copy-paste horror film. And I think it's getting huge high rankings because of a YouTube following.
Yeah, it does reek of that, doesn't it?
It does.
It reeks of an audience being reeled in by their previous work, a younger crowd certainly than you and I are. And you're right, if you loved everything that they've done before this, you're going to love their first step into a wider cinematic landscape.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to. If you like what they did on a small budget, they've obviously grown to have a huge following and money and everything that comes with it to be able to make a motion picture. I think by default, you're going to like the first one. You're going to like the first few. You might change your mind after 3, 4, 5 if you do realise there's not a natural filmmaking talent there. Now, I've listened to an Empire podcast with the two lads speaking about this film, and for what it's worth, they seem like really cool, likeable dudes. But that doesn't mean I'm going to like the film because they seem like they're cool. And I haven't, like you said, I haven't got in on the entry level. So for me, I went in, like you said, seeing all this high applause, high regard, and just was really underwhelmed.
I know one of them had medical trials to fund some of their short films on YouTube. Imagine that, medical trials. Well, you'd get paid for trying a drug that's not actually been approved by the FDA or something.
Oh, shit. So they put their body at risk to finance their project.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I respect that or not.
That's what I mean. I think potentially, are they these people without the cameras? Are they this fun? Are they this hilarious without the cameras? Or was it all for the cameras? Yeah. Who knows?
I do wonder. I wondered this when watching the film. I thought about it after thinking about doing this episode. I wonder if it's partially down to our age. We missed out on that sort of YouTube extravaganza. We both use YouTube, but it's not, like, certainly for me, it's not part of my everyday ritual entertainment like it is so many other people that are a lot younger than us.
Mm-hmm.
That instant gratification, that fast entertainment, that easily accessible sort of hit of dopamine of short, sharp videos that are entertaining. I wonder if we've just missed the boat, so to speak, because we are that little bit older.
Definitely, yeah.
But our opinions are just as important as the young, sprightly beings out there, right?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, good. As of 2023, Talk To Me is the second highest grossing film in A24's history.
Ah!
Would you like to hear the list?
Yeah.
In at number 10, Ex Machina. Number 9, The Witch. Number 8, Midsommar. Number 7, Uncut Gems. Number 6, The Whale. 5, Moonlight. 4, Lady Bird. 3, Hereditary. 2, Talk To Me. And number 1, one of your favourites of all time, Everything Everywhere All At Once.
Fuck that.
apart from Lady Bird, I've seen all of them, I believe. Almost all of them are better than this and Everywhere All at Once.
My sentiments exactly. Like Ex Machina, Midsummer, Uncut Gems. I know I like The Whale more than you do, but I, as you said, it's a better film. It baffles me that Talk to Me is higher up than all of them.
It's because of YouTube subscribers.
Yeah, it's got to be.
It is.
It's got to be.
I can't believe for a second that there's a genuine horror film fan out there that thinks that this isn't a huge copy paste. It's just, I just take from loads of things and make it very convenient in the film for it to all work.
See, that's what's interesting to me, Dad. I'm not a big horror guy, but a lot of people that listen to this podcast and who follow us on Instagram and on social media and that are big into their horror films. I would like to hear from them to see what they think. I don't know if they are in on the Philippou ground level and love everything that they've done beforehand, or if they're just purist horror fans. Those are the people I want to hear from. I want to know if those are the people that have rated it so highly on IMDb on Rotten Tomatoes, because we're not even into the actual podcast yet and we're basically showing our hand. But I think you have to in a film like this, when it's held in such high regard, it's hard to look past that. And for me, as someone who doesn't like horror but love film, I can't wrap my head around it. I can't. And I don't think I ever will.
Well, if I was to compare this to Hereditary, and I love horror films, if I was to compare this to Hereditary, there is no comparison. Hereditary is objectively a better film.
And Talk to Me is higher in the A24 grossing list.
Yeah, but that's just evidence of lunchbox generation, really. That's MCU will always outsell The Lighthouse. Will always, it's just going to happen. That's natural. Like, I think you said once, like, the films like Die Hard and that were them days sort of version of MCU. But I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know, because, you know, there was Supermans and stuff back then in the times of Die Hard and that.
It seems that in recent years, horror is sort of appealing to possibly a younger audience. Because from my teenage years into my young adulthood, horror seemed to me too much of a tricky topic to tackle because I'm a scaredy cat. For me, it always felt more adult than what my allowance would allow. As I've got older, I don't know if it's just a case of me maturing, becoming like a fine wine. I look at it now and it feels so much younger. The threat seems so much lesser. And the people that are at the centre of these stories, like you look at The Black Phone, it's a kid. You look at Talk to Me, it's like ridiculous teenagers.
Talk to Me is Stranger Things with antidepressants.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
Yeah,
it's just that it's a little crew of kidlings with one really weird sort of adult looking dude who looks like he should be playing rugby hanging out with kids. It's fucking weird.
Yeah. The Philippou brothers have attracted more than 1.5 billion views on YouTube, with over 6.5 million subscribers tuned in across their social media channels. Just mad numbers, isn't it?
We covered all that.
Yeah, but still, 1.5 billion views is a madness. I'm not intrigued.
For fake fails.
Fake fails, so like someone falling over, but it's staged, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so you remember the golden age of Vines?
Yeah.
Some would be staged, but it'd be almost like in the UK you had a program called You've Been Framed.
Yeah.
Someone getting chased by a duck. You can't stage that.
No.
But they did a lot of fake fails. So it's almost like, I can't stand it when I see the stage stuff.
Yeah.
It really winds me up. Like, why has this person got their camera ready for something that is clearly staged, but they're trying to sell it as not even mockumentary, they're trying to sell it as real.
Yeah.
That really winds me up. It's false.
It's so obvious as well. I know the videos you speak of, and it's like sickening. Like, I've seen ones where someone, like, it's all convenient on camera that someone's spiking someone else's drink, and then someone will go up to them and be like, oh, no, it's drink. And then the acting in it's like, you see better acting in the British soaps over here. Like, you're not fooling anyone. So to know that they've got such a following, and if what you say is right, and staged stuff like that, yeah, I question
it. Based on a lie, isn't it? It's like invading Iraq when Colin Powell said they got weapons of mass destruction, then years later saying, oh, no, we doctored the photos. It's like, what?
You just added a pinch of political in there, didn't you?
Yeah, and it's like Brexit in that regard. They said we'd be able to give all the money that we're sending to Europe into the NHS, and the minute they get Brexit voted in, they say, oh, is that money now going to the NHS? No, nah.
I can't now.
You sold a lie.
Yeah.
I've probably taken that too far. I don't think the Philippou brothers are selling a lie. They're just not my cup of tea.
For me, they're not up there with Brexit yet.
No.
But I'm not enamoured by the work I've seen in this. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah.
What did you like about Talk to Me?
I liked the makeup on some of the ghosts, and there was some good quality special effects with, you know, faces getting dismembered and skulls crunching. Yeah, I thought that looked good. I was quite impressed when the person who holds the hand and says, "Let me in," the very first time sees something. When you first see what they're seeing, I thought that was kind of cool. It made me go, "Ooh, yeah, that's a bit rough."
I think the first one certainly is quite striking. You see the eyes turn black. And I actually think Sophie Wilde, who played Mia, I thought she was quite good in it.
She's good.
As it goes, I think she put in quite a decent performance that was believable in a really unbelievable setting. She was fully committed to the role. And for that, I give her kudos.
Well, it's very young, early in her career. I don't think any of these have done a full feature film.
Yeah.
So it's kind of huge. She shows loads of promise.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Absolutely
yeah.
loads. Yeah. Another like was, you know, it appeared to me it was like all subtext for like drug use with addiction.
Mm.
So this hand thing's the drug. And they're of that generation where drugs and escapism is needed because they're sort of dissociated. Like, it's obvious from the very start how much they're all on their phones. It was so fucking annoying.
Yeah.
Like, it's all, oh. And the opening scene is a big Aussie lad heading into a party to get his brother. No reason as to why he'd be concerned about going to get it, but I assume it's because you find out later, actually, that he's also been involved in this possessed hand. What this madness. The fact that it's been going on that long and they haven't even, the news haven't got hold of it through all these videos is an absolute farce.
Yeah, young people are killing themselves because they're holding a hand.
Yeah, I mean, I'll come to that again later in another dislike, but there's so many plot holes and stuff that are an issue with it. But yeah, the subtext for drug use I thought was kind of good. But then again, I think drugs are far more scarier and more interesting.
Yeah.
In that regard, you know, watching kids lose it over, like, maybe if these kids were taking a drug and then seeing shit and it's a new drug.
Yeah.
But this, you sort of like, oh, it's an embalmed hand and stuff. And it's, I don't know. Yeah. But I kind of like the subtext for the drug use and doctoring grief with addiction. Like, Mia's looking for an escape from her grief.
Yeah.
So to get this rush of seeing an afterlife and these scary looking things, these ghosts and spirits that have drowned, that was kind of cool. I could sort of see that. I don't know if the Philippou brothers know that they did that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the fact that they doctor videos to make it look like fails. I don't know, but certainly I did see that. I read it like that. It's that subtext of trying to distract yourself when everything around you is just so awful, of whatever that is, alcohol, exercise, drugs, whatever that may be, whatever you can do to keep your mind busy so you're not engaging with the terrible thing that's going on in your everyday life.
Yeah.
That is smart. And that is something I did pick up on. I'd love to hear if the Philippous did that deliberately. I mean, for their sake and our opinion on their sake, like, I hope they did.
I should imagine so. You know, they're young, it's Adelaide, they live in a world where they're like constantly feeding social media. Mm. I should imagine that, you know, they're very aware of drugs and addiction and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Any more?
Crazy guys. I liked Joe Bird as Riley. I thought, for me, he was like the only likeable character. Everyone else was a first-class cunt.
Yeah.
I think he's a good actor. I followed his story and performance more intently than, say, Sophie Wilde's character Mia, because Mia's been written a million times.
Yes, of course she has.
Disgruntled teenager, butting heads with silent father or mother.
Yeah.
Because the mum's died, and so she goes on like a downward spiral. She causes something malicious to be like born into her world and then goes on a crusade to stop it. It's no different to Reagan in The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Her dad's not present.
Mm.
So she's kind of lonely but sweet, like Mia's sweet. And, you know, she plays with a Ouija board for some form of escapism and lets the devil into her house. It's really similar. I mean, it's a bang old average possession malicious thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It does feel like you've seen one of these sort of films and you've seen them all. I certainly agree with that.
Mm.
And the young lad that played Riley, I thought he was, like you said, I thought he was very good in it.
His character's more interesting because he doesn't really have a place.
Yeah.
And you think he's trying to find his place.
And he's a lot younger than the rest of the cast. And when he is being possessed and stuff like that, it's a lot more, I guess, gripping and almost believable to see someone like who's a little more susceptible to things because he's younger, his brain's not fully developed. I mean, nor are the teens, to be fair, but because he is a lot younger and a lot more immature and a lot more vulnerable, those scenes, he really does give it some, doesn't he?
His brain's not developed.
Well, I mean, I don't know much about kids, but I don't think at that age your brain's fully done, is it? Okay. Any more likes or shall I go on to mine?
Go on to yours, sir.
Yeah, it's the simple fact that it's another horror in the bag. And I say horror with inverted commas. For the almost 4 decades I have been on this earth, I have avoided the horror genre on account of being a man of wuss. This podcast has encouraged me to dip thy toe into terror, and being able to tick off another horror is a huge thing for this precious little podcaster. And for me, I think I will say it, if a horror film doesn't do much for me, I think if nothing else, it's another film in the bag of a genre that I would normally avoid. And that helps me grow as a cinephile, I guess, as a podcaster. It's a film that I wouldn't necessarily touch because it's about possession and it's about horror. And possession horror's like top tier, my most avoided genre, along with spiders, as you know. So going into this, I was thinking, fuck, I'm going to struggle. And then, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes into it, I was like, well, the biggest thing I can take away from this is I've watched a horror film.
Well, a good chef tries their food, don't they?
They do.
They taste their food, even if they don't like fish, they have to try it.
They do, indeed.
Make sure that seasoning's right.
Second thing I liked is just the runtime. Talk to Me is a short and snappy film that doesn't outstay its welcome. At only 90 minutes long, it was an ideal breakup of a shitty Saturday spent at home. Now, I think it's testament to the film if my two major likes have nothing to do with the film itself. One's about the length and the other's the fact that I've watched a horror, and I do think that speaks volumes. My final like is kind of double-edged with a dislike, so if you'll allow me, I'll go from my like into the dislike. And I just didn't get scared. I'm not going to lie to you, Harold. The trailer for this one had me worried, mate. This Podcorn Kernel don't play with possession pictures.
Yeah.
But that fear anxiety was soon laid to rest once I realised that the whole premise was idiot teens getting precisely what they deserved.
Yeah.
Now, when you suggested us to do an episode on this film, straight away my bum was clucking. I was like, I've heard about this film. I know it's a really highly rated horror film.
I got duped. I looked at the ratings.
I went and watched the trailer and I was like, oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Mm. I thought I was going to struggle. When the trailer is scarier than the film, that's an issue for me.
You thought it was going to be the chopper of horror, didn't you?
I thought a mad little Aussie indie film that's getting people talking. I thought, what are they doing? What are they unearthing in the horror genre that you would have considered to be done to death at this point?
I was
what
excited.
Are they doing? And then, yeah, I soon realised that that wasn't the case. So that leads me into my first dislike. I didn't get scared. I got myself all worked up for absolutely nothing. Before going into this one, I honestly thought it was going to be one of the scariest films I ever set my eyes on. Not only was I not scared, I thought it was just outright shit. I was pissed off that it didn't bother me in the slightest. I got a great night's sleep with the light off, but I'd fully planned on staying awake, sucking my thumb with my partner stroking my hair.
Ooh.
Now, it's a great thing for me as someone who scares easily that I didn't get scared. But it's also a bad thing that as someone who gets so easily scared that it didn't scare me. You couldn't scare me. And if you're a horror film, I'm sort of your base level audience. Mm-hmm. Like you can fuck me up quite easily. Mm-hmm. A couple of jump scares, a cliffhanger of an ending, some horrible shots and music and I'm done. Like you've target achieved.
Scariest thing about this was the pace. Oh.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
I went back to the hospital 4 times in this film, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I gave this one a second watch like I do with all the films. And I was like, I didn't need it. No. Did I find anything more from it? No. Am I still absolutely complexed and bemused at why this is regarded so highly? Abso-fucking-lutely.
Yep.
I just don't get it. I really don't. And listen, I know I'm potentially a lot older than the target audience, and I understand that as a result of that I don't find it as impactful as an engrossing, but fuck me was I bored and fuck me was I unbothered for the whole thing.
Yeah I wasn't invested, not once.
No It's damning, really.
Yep.
Give me some more damning dislikes.
I'll start with a little batch that you probably won't have to respond much on.
Okay.
A film of annoyances.
Mm.
See a music. Oh, look, I'm incognito and all my songs and music videos are like me playing checkers with my mouth. Crazy Frog ringtone. Fuck's that in it for so much?
We're past that.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
What a throwback to a time that was shit.
Yeah.
Opening scenes. So parasitical bystanders filming rather than doing, which is what the actual directors sort of represent, like on their YouTube channel, built on fake fails, illegal stunts, endangering lives, backyard wrestling. And I think the only reason this film has such high ratings is because Raka Raka has 7 million subscribers. Almost all the actors are on their phones more than they are actually in the film. throughout. See, I don't want to be reminded constantly that we live in this world of dissociation.
I'm confused by that because at first I was like, oh, is this a smart satirical look at the state of society today and how the youth are obsessed with their phones? But then when you learn that the directors are YouTube clickbait people, it's like, well, you feed that machine.
Yeah, well, phones are what makes them money.
Exactly that, yeah.
So they're appearing all throughout the whole film. Like, you've got characters looking at their phones constantly. It's non-ending. And the way they pull out their phones for every event, it actually made me hate myself. I was like, on the rare occasion I pull out a phone and take a photo of something or a video of something. It's like going to concerts, taking a video of saying you're going to delete a month from now. It really wound me up. And Alexandra Jensen looks like Robert Plant. That really wound me up. You know Riley's sister, innit? Curly hair.
Mm.
Disobeys mum, has a party, and her brother almost dies. She looks like Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin. And I couldn't move past that. Anyway, I'll carry on. If your face and neck become bruised and black when you've let it in, those marks wouldn't disappear just because the spirit is no longer there, but they do. So, you know, every time they get possessed, eyes go black, their neck goes red, their mouth goes like dark purple, but then the ghost leaves and it's gone.
Yeah.
But when Riley
smashes head on the table,
there's real blood and there's real skull and stuff. I'm like, they're either injuries or they ain't injuries. You can't say, Riley, when our spirit's in it, all this bruising, all this skin being damaged and ruined, oh, it's going to go back when the ghost leaves. This is not a casual Saturday night doing weed with your bros in the basement.
No.
If there's real, and these videos are online, there's no way people wouldn't be investigating this. There's no way it wouldn't have hit mainstream media. It would be all over the news. The fact that it's like, oh, it's just teenagers, ignore them. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
No, inconsistent. The incompetence of these people couldn't stop a child from almost killing himself. So when he first bangs his head, not one of them jumps up to help. They just let him do it a few more times and they just go, oh my God, oh my God. And they've all got their phones out. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is actually talking to how useless these little cunts are going to be when they're older. There's no skill. There's no life skills. There's no reactionary. There's no pace to them. I hate them. Same group of people already with a reason one guy dies.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the start, this Aussie dude, the film opens, he's walking into a very lively party. Obviously, they've been doing this hand thing. The guy's all messed up. He finds his brother's like dissociated. He's totally gone. And then his brother stabs him and then kills himself in the head with a knife. Now, it tells you in the film that these were the same group that are then doing it throughout the whole film. And it's like, so one death, they're still laughing at the result of what happens. Yeah. But then this little Riley almost dies later, that Haley's like, just destroy it, get rid of it, throw it away. It's like, why did it almost take two deaths for you to reach that conclusion? Why was it still fun after one guy stabbed himself in the face?
You was at a party where a palm made a young lad stab himself, ponder head.
Yep.
Then you took said hand to another party and played the same game that caused the kid to stab himself, ponder head.
And only after like third trip to the hospital in the later act of the film, do they then decide as a team, we're going to go on the bus, we're going to find the brother of the stab face guy, and then we're going to try and get help. And that guy offers no advice. The whole getting on the bus, talking to him, they spread out on the bus like a little sneaky group of Stranger Things cunts on antidepressants. I hate them. I hate them all.
Go get it.
I hate them all.
Go get it. Have you got it?
It's shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a crock of shit.
I really wish I could sit there and play devil's advocate with you and go, oh, come on, man. No, it meant this. Oh, no, it means this. Or, you know, I think you might have misinterpreted, but I'm right there with you. Like, I completely agree. And I watched it with my partner the first time and I looked at her and I was like, what did you think? And she was like, yeah, it was good. And I was like, do you really think that?
She was on a phone.
Because I was like, do you really think that? And then she was like, well, yeah, it was all right. I think there's a lot of that. I think because it's picked up momentum. It's one of those films that's hugely popular. It came onto Netflix, done amazing things in terms of streaming numbers and high ratings and the money it made back on the budget. All these, it's a barnstorming success. So I think when you hear that, I think some people are led into thinking, well, this is going to be good. I was until 5 minutes into the fucking thing. I was like, oh, no, this is shit.
Mm.
And again, I'm going to say it a few more times probably. I know I'm probably a bit too old for this film, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't be able to find some sort of value. And the value I found in this was that I've watched a horror film. It was short and I didn't get scared. They are not positives.
But if someone made a new chocolate bar, brand new, different wrapper, it's a chocolate bar you have never heard of before in your life.
What's its name?
Chome. okay, and they hand you this chocolate bar. You open the wrapper, you're like, oh, this wrapper's a bit weird. It looks a bit new, a bit modern. And you bite a chocolate bar and it tastes good. You're like, oh, it tastes good.
Yeah.
You can still be subject to new films from young crowds and enjoy it and find value in it. You just ate a shitty chocolate bar called Chome.
Yeah. And if that Chome is good, I'm championing the Chome. But if that Chome tastes like Chode, I'm chucking it out. But
man doesn't like the taste of a thick dick.
No, I like them skinny and sweaty.
Oh, like a little pepperoni.
Yeah,
little jerky.
I do love a pepperoni though.
Go to a little South African store on the 8217. They do excellent jerky.
Yeah,
biltong. It's wonderful.
I do love me some cured meat.
I had a little stick of zebra the other day. Tasted good.
Zebra meat.
Zebra meat. Yeah. Zebra meat.
But is it beefy? I imagine it's beefy, but with stripes.
Yeah.
But not stripes on the meat.
I think they season it to death. They cure it to death. It could be human. You wouldn't give a fuck. You'd eat it.
Mm.
You'd eat it.
I'd go as far as say as I'd probably prefer to eat human jerky than watch this film again.
If you want to fail on a date, chunk down some biltong and then breathe on her. Fuck, oh, man, that stuff's strong.
Hot meat breath.
It's like the toothpaste of goats.
Jesus Christ. Are you done with your dislikes? Shall I delve into mine?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't care.
Mm.
Talk to Me focuses on teens getting their kicks by dancing with the dead. The fact these idiots discovered that holding this hand brought evil spirits into their body, yet continued to do it, grinded my gears. I wasn't once bothered when they succumbed to spicy spirits, and I, for one, was in the camp of their evil dead fucking with the group of youngsters. Mm. They did it to themselves, and I spent the entirety of the film going, that's what you fucking get.
That's what you get.
That's what you get. I don't care. I actually don't care. I actually wanted the hand to get more people. I wanted the hand to grow on another hand, and then it'd be like the thing in the Addams Family and chase the teens and kill the teens and just mass murdering, possessed, embalming palm hands, killing people.
Yep.
It was just so tedious.
What's with the dude who, so you know the Christian lad who used to date Mia and now he's dating Robert Plant, and he falls off the chair and makes mouth love with a dog.
Yeah.
And then he jumps up shocked and he's like, delete it, delete it. I thought, okay, that's the end of his story. He's going to leave the house now and he's going to get bullied for kissing a dog and kill himself. I thought that's the natural path.
No,
he just jumps back in the chair.
Yeah.
So he's delete it. That was, and then he's all up for it.
It's that in a film that's unbelievable, supernatural, all of these things, in a film that's riddled with plot holes, the fact that these people have done something and it lets them see evil spirits that possess them for a little bit yet continue to do it is mad to me. I used to smoke weed a fair bit when I was younger. I had a couple of funny turns on weed. I'm never touching that shit again because I've had a bad experience with them. I'm not then going to go, might be different this time.
I used to huff aerosol on a pillow. So I'd spray Shaw or whatever all over a pillow and then huff it. And I didn't even know you could die from it.
You didn't do that.
I found, honestly, I did. I swear to God, I swear on my mum's life. I used to huff aerosol.
What's it like?
Head rush.
We're not promoting it on the podcast.
Never do that. But no young kids are listening to this one. So if you're 35, do it. No,
do it, yeah.
It's not like you can say, oh, I was, my brain hadn't developed, like Adam said earlier. Dribbling Jill.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't have kids. My brain wasn't developed at 14. I don't think it's fully developed now.
It's because you were smoking weed.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Mm. You are right. I was going to say this is my final dislike, but it's not. It's just another dislike I've highlighted and written down. And we spoke about it already. It's just how goddamn overhyped it is. Talk to Me is held in extremely high regard by critics and consumers alike. And I made the mistake of buying into that narrative. I was so let down by this one. And I am honestly struggling to see why people love it so much. And I've mentioned it already. I know, yeah, I'm not the target audience, but still, a shit film's a shit film.
Yes.
And I do think that this is just a shit film.
Yes.
I can't help think that this is hot garbage that has somehow got mass acceptance, a la Black Phone. That sort of film that, like, going into it, you hear only good things. It's a hot buzz, so hot right now. Going into it, you're like, oh, wow, this is going to be amazing. Then you watch it and you're like, am I watching a completely fucking different film? Have I got a different version of this? Because every other fucker's saying it's amazing.
I've had people message me since we did Black Phone saying, actually, it's a really good film. If you look, I'm like, no, I don't need, he's the most inept serial killer ever. Yeah. Can't fell asleep in his kitchen, the kid got out of the house.
Lest we forget, a fully grown, fairly heavy set man is stuck in a hole and gets punched to death by a child with a telephone and then strangled.
A telephone that has maybe 2 tablespoons of earth in it.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's so mad. How can I buy into that? And how can I buy into this when it's like, oh, but these poor teenagers, Don't hold the hand. If you don't hold the hand, you're not going to get possessed and killed.
I could get out of a 3 foot hole really quick. If a kid was there and he had this little wire around my neck and he was pulling it, I mean, I could get out of that hole, snap that kid's neck and be a wicked serial killer.
How would you fare if you'd just been huffing some links?
I'd still be fine because you only get like a 2-3 second head rush. The long-term damage, I mean, that's why I've only got 1 foot.
1 foot and no hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually incredible.
I really would like it if someone would draw what they think.
It's actually incredible how you are able to produce this podcast and continue with your everyday life when you're missing so much.
Baby roller coasters.
Yeah.
All around the house.
Yeah.
All the way. Everyone knows when I'm going for a poo.
Way! Yeah, they do. I got some questions.
Mm-hmm.
What deceased actor would you like to bring back from the dead to have a conversation with?
Klaus Kinski.
Who's this?
He's the German actor that did all of Fitzcarraldo and Aguirre, Wrath of God with Werner Herzog.
Oh, they rucked, didn't they?
They did, and I would like I'd request that Michael Fassbender translate for me because he speaks quite well, quite good German. I want to hear some of the ways that Klaus was going to try and get revenge on the man that tried to burn him to death. Do you know Werner Herzog set fire to the house that Klaus Kinski was in to kill him? And
wait, the
only reason Klaus lived was because his dog woke him up and chased off Werner Herzog.
And Herzog's still a free man that's allowed to make films.
They both tried to kill each other a few times.
Like, legitimately tried to murder.
He set fire to his house and the dog chased off Werner Herzog. Can you imagine that? They were doing it all the time.
And please tell me, how did Matey Boy try to kill Herzog?
They had a few things. I know he pulled a gun on him. I'm quite sure he pulled a gun on him, but they were back and forth all the time. All the time. I mean, he said something once, didn't he? He said, like, we have great love or great bond. We have a great love, great bond, but both of us plan to murder each other. Literally. Yeah. I think Werner said as well, like, Klaus was one of the greatest actors of the century, but he was also a monster and a great pestilence.
He's one of the best actors, but I want to kill him dead.
Got to watch their movies. Got to.
Yeah, I've never seen them.
I watched them when I was really young because I had an older brother that was studying to be an actor and he'd bring them home from the library. And that's when I watched Aguirre, Wrath of God and Fitzcarraldo.
They're good films?
They were. From what I remember watching, it's like you are enamoured with the undertaking.
Mm.
But when you know the history of them two, wow. I would love to talk to Klaus Kinski because he was insane.
That's
he did like 150 films.
Would you want to talk with him with Werner Herzog present as well?
No, just Fassbender.
Okay.
Because Herzog's alive and he's so honest.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I tried to kill him. Like, he's too honest. I don't need to hear from him. I want to hear how Kinski, some of his plans to get him back. What a film. That would be Oscar baiting. If someone did a film about the war between them two, it'd be incredible.
I'd love to see it.
Fassbender can play Kinski.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've known that Herzog was beefing with someone he worked with. I didn't know the actor's name.
Mm.
I did not know they were literally trying to kill one another. That's mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about that.
Mm-hmm.
My answer's a little bit more basic and it would be Robin Williams. I just miss him as a comedic presence and as a dramatic actor as well. I'd just like to speak to him.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it'd be interesting to see, like...
Would you try and help him?
I would just keep saying, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
It's not your fault. Mm-hmm. And be like, do you know how much of an impact you left on people? Like, you were loved. You were deeply, deeply loved. But I think as more time goes on, we've learned that he was just quite an unwell man. And he decided to part this earth and he's on his own terms rather than waiting for the condition to take him.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is tragic and he's one of my favourite actors of all time, so I think I'd bring him back for a chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which film got you anxious before it even started?
The Whale.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, what's to go? No one's going into The Whale excited. No one. You're seeing a man
Brendan Fraser was.
Well, potentially, but I knew everything I needed to know about The Whale before watching it. I knew it would be a difficult watch. I knew I was never going to sit and watch it from a comedic standpoint and just laugh at how fat he was. It was so hard to watch that film for me.
You're too deep to do that.
It's the slow suicide. I knew going in, I would find it a really difficult film to watch because it's, you know, that's probably why it's actually a very, very good film, and a film that will be renowned for years, I think, is because it's so rare to watch a film where you're watching the lead be fat and kill himself through food. It's fucking weird.
Yeah, you see it time and time again, from alcohol, drug abuse, domestic violence, just obsessive nature.
They're relatable.
Yeah.
Whereas the eating yourself to death knowingly isn't.
Yeah.
Some people have compulsion. Like, they'll eat and eat and eat.
Well, that's his addiction, isn't it?
They don't want to be fat. Yeah, but he wants to die through eating.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. You're not seeing that film advertised and think, oh, this will be fun.
Mm.
You're not seeing that film. You're not seeing the trailer. You're not hearing about it going, I fancy a laugh, I'll stick the whale on.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are, you're a fucking monster.
Well, you'd be like, it'd be no different to watching a film about someone starve themselves.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a difficult watch. Yeah.
Well, you watch Flight and you don't want Denzel to keep drinking. You want him to get on the straight and narrow, and then he just keeps drinking. It's just like, it's exhausting to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that it's bad. Me as a human being, it's exhausting to watch.
Me too. Me too.
You ain't human.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
That was exhausting to take that hit. That was quite hurtful.
Mm.
The film that I was anxious about before watching it, Midsommar.
Oh, yeah.
As I said, I'm a real tart when it comes to films. And just knowing the pedigree of Ari Aster, knowing he did Hereditary, knowing that that's a film I don't think I could handle, I went into Midsommar really worried because, again, it's a really highly regarded and I consider decent horror. And I was anxious going in because I didn't know what to expect. And the film does this amazing thing of like almost tricking you to think it's not terrifying because it's all set in the day. It's beautiful surroundings. But the more you get into it, and then when you think about it afterwards, it's quite an unsettling film.
Well, it's actually a dark comedy.
Yeah, I see why you say that. Yeah,
I would definitely assert that. I would definitely say it's a dark comedy. Like the way they handle some of the scenes with the bodies and stuff for me, it was a dark comedy. That's all I saw as that. It still had some really shocking scenes, but I just think, yeah, like the reactions when that guy first takes a nosedive off the cliff and that.
Yeah.
There's elements of comedy in it.
I did feel that as well. Mm. And in his newest film, Bo is Afraid, he did do that, didn't he? I'm not misremembering it.
I think so. I think is that did, Joaquin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one, there's certain moments in that where you're going, oh, fucking hell, that's a bit. But there is some great comedic moments in it as well. I think he's a master of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
In Talk to Me, terrible teenagers hold an embalmed hand in a bid to be possessed by an evil spirit. You find yourself at a party with said hand. Would you hold the hand and let them sassy spirits in?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't touch it?
No.
Not intrigued?
Wait, who's with me? Am I with all them little kids?
No, you're in a part. You're in company that you want to be in. So your friends. Or just me and you. Me and you and a couple of other mates. We're having a few beers. Not too many where you're like, fuck it, I'll do anything.
I'd only do it to verify it's the truth of it. Almost scientific.
See, I thought you would.
I'd do it to see if it's true. But before I even put my hand on it and say, let me in, I'm checking the whole house for any way for it to not be charlatan. For any way for it to not be a ruse. I'm checking everything. And I'd even say, right, now I'm going to take this hand and I'm going to take it to a place of my choosing. And all you cunts are staying here.
So and you'd I'm going be to go, alone yeah? with the hand.
Yeah, I'd go do it on my own. I just wouldn't say, I'd say, wait, what did I say first? Talk
so
to me. I'd say, talk to me. I'd see the ghost and I'd leave it at that. I wouldn't say, let me in. I'm not going to be raped by a ghost.
No.
No. But I'd say, talk to me. If I see a ghost, I'd be like, wicked. I've taken it to a place. I've proven that it's true. And then I'd go to the press and I'd sell the story, make millions and become a YouTuber.
That's a smart man move right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, not record it on your phone, make out with a dog and smash your head on the table for no real reason.
Mm.
I wouldn't. I mean, yeah. That's a given. Like, I could, if I walked in here today and you had a monkey paw or a hand and said to me, touch this, the spirits, I'm not doing it. Mm. Even if you say, I'm only joking, it's too late. The seed's been planted.
Yep.
You know those silly little things when you were a kid, like Ouija boards and Bloody Mary and Candyman?
Mm.
Did you ever do any of that shit?
Yeah, I think so.
I was on a year six trip where we got to stay away from home for a few days. And the whole thing was, it was like, oh, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary. Me and my mate went up to a mirror. I did it twice.
Who's a mirror?
A mirror, sorry. Oh. We went up to a mirror and said, oi, do you fancy playing Bloody Mary? No, walked up to a mirror. And I said Bloody Mary twice and I got a nosebleed. Now, I'm not stupid.
Was you panicking?
I was prone to nosebleeds as a fat child.
Well, there you go. You've just added the bit of information
but
we needed.
At the time, that scared me shitless. I was away from home, said Bloody Mary twice, and my nose bled in front of the mirror. Shat my pants.
Jesus.
Yeah, scary times. What would you rate Talk To Me out of 10?
2.
There it is. Yeah.
1 for Riley and 1 for special effects.
Yeah. I mean, I went a bit higher. I went 3.
Yeah.
And that's because one, every film gets a point for being able to be made.
That's ridiculous. Then that another means we're point, never going to get a 0.
Then another point is Sophie Wilde, I thought, was quite good. And number 3, I did quite watching these idiot teenagers get exactly what they fucking deserved. So
there it is again.
Yeah.
The guy who likes to see the world burn.
Yeah. Adam loves anarchy. Confirmed. That gives Talk To Me a total score of 5 out of 20.
That's what you get.
That's what you fucking get. If you like your terrors to be teeny, tedious and totally underwhelming, or if you have ever wanted to see a horror hand palm out precisely what peer-pressured pricks deserve, then Talk To Me could be a film for you. Talk To Me is available to stream on Netflix. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed The Conjuring, Ouija, Origin of Evil and Toy Story. Should we play a game?
Give it a name, give it a name, give it a name now. We birth a plot and then make a trailer. What the plot?
Action!
Right. A single dad of 3 children lives in an old converted water tower that overlooks the LA skyline. That's it. I'm joking. The grief of losing his wife and now the stress of caring for his children sends him into a catatonic state. No one can rouse him. The children, aged 5, 14 and 18, hold meetings every day to discuss what to do with him. It soon becomes apparent that this is no normal family or household when the 14-year-old says, if he's asleep but cannot wake, then he's technically dead. She then places a card on the centre of the table which shows a stick man falling from the tower. The eldest, 18-year-old Michael, then says, I agree with Lucy. That's what we did with Ben, Sophie and Kyle. He points to a wall, which we now see has over 20 portrait photos of kids, young adults and adults, and in the corner of each frame is one of these cards that depicts a stick man death. 5-year-old Margot says, I don't want that. And then Michael tries to remind her of how their mother and father almost voted for her to be drowned in the garden. Margot says that was mummy, not daddy. The film then lives through flashbacks of the other 10 siblings that have been killed since. This family had some sort of lottery going on where, rather than struggle to get food in, they'd kill off a family member every month through some weird voting system that they all partook in by putting these cards on a face.
So they had loads of kids to kill them off.
Well, the mum and dad obviously lost their mind, or they are losing their mind, or one of them already had. It's sort of like a Fred Rose West relationship whereby they would make all their own siblings vote for like who would die and then how they'd die. Throw from the tower, drown in the garden, and it would all be done through stick men pictures. Really, really creepy.
Ooh.
And these last 3 kids, almost like Dogtooth in a way, these last 3 kids are continuing the trend because they don't know anything different. So they're looking at their catatonic dad who is breathing, but he's totally gone because he's gone, like in the head.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, what do? We don't understand how to progress further in this.
So it's kind of like cultist activity,
kind
of like Dogtooth scenario where there's a family that are sort of being withheld from normal populace and normal society and they're all intertwined in this weird death lottery.
Mm. It's like, yeah, like a lottery. And through flashback, we see that it was a huge family. It's 1950s. Over in an old water tower overlooking LA, like a converted water tower and turned into a house. And it's become, like you were saying, like this really odd little cult. And it wouldn't be all, not all 10 or 12 kids would have been just the mum and dad. Like, could have been brother and sister stuff as well going
so
on.
So it's all stinky.
It's all happening. It's all stinky up in that water tower.
And I reckon for this to work, like, people know that that family up there, steer clear. Just that every now and then they'll come down for rations, but everyone gives them a wide berth because they're fucking weird.
Very weird.
Up.
But I think before these kids maybe go any further, I think potentially they do, for by the end of the first act, they launch their dad off the tower and kill him, because to them it's not shocking. And then I think child services finally make it to the house. And then they ask them how it all happened, and maybe it unravels through, you know, the child services person or doctor about what actually happened in this house.
Yeah. So maybe like social services are like reluctant to go and visit them, because so many times they've gone to try all these mysterious happenings in this water tower. Maybe time and time again, they've tried to get it sorted, but no one's pressing charges. It was always a bit whiffy, but nothing could be proven. So it's one of those, they're sort of like a separate state, that water tower, that family, are sort of ignored by society.
Well, they live an isolated life, but it's also the 50s. So it's not like now. It's not like if your kid didn't come to school, they investigate
it. Yeah.
It's quite rural.
So it's sort of the unspoken thing amongst this community is like, you leave them alone. Mm. Don't go playing near there. Don't talk to, if you see those kids by their water tower, don't go talking to them. Mm. I like that. This is my sort of film, fucked up. See it as a thriller, drama. Like that's my.
It's not supernatural at all.
No, it's just a family that maybe have continued this really fucked up tradition. And through the flashbacks and stuff, we better understand what the fuck's gone on. Then. Well, maybe
Fred and Rose Rest killed two of their own kids.
Yeah, that's mad.
So, and they also did sexual things with ones that got old enough and stuff. It was such an odd, like Cromwell Place, creepy as fuck.
Well, I mean, your description of that is giving off those sort of vibes, that sort of creepy setting that as an audience, you want to know. Mm. Like you're watching it going, oh, they're wrong. Like, oh, but I can't look away. So yeah, a big fan of that.
Do you know, I had an end scene in my head as well.
Go on.
So, you know, I was saying at the start about how they depict stick men as how someone's going to die. So I was thinking in the end scene, the youngest kid who's like 5 or 6, while being counselled, because it is the 50s, that there probably wouldn't be child services, but there would be early doors psychologists, grassroots psychologists and stuff. But I think the child then draws a stick kid holding the hand of its mum with a balloon or something. So something happy, trying to depict something happy to see a change in what they do. Or that 5-year-old's now 25 in a calf and draws the stick man again. Yeah. Like it never left them.
And then you see him walk with his family towards the tower.
Oh, that tower.
Yeah.
That needs to be burned to the ground. Maybe they could Gilbert Grape it.
Yeah.
Just maybe. Tear it down, burn it like this, you know.
If you wanted a happy ending.
I don't think them kids can be saved. The 5-year-old, maybe. The 18-year-old, Michael, he's gone.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you've seen too much.
Seen too much.
So, yeah, I like that. It's my favourite genre of film. Psychological thriller / drama. Directing it, I'd go with Steven Soderbergh, did Unsane, Side Effects, Contagion. The man is a prolific filmmaker and he can make all sorts of films, but I know I think he's very good in that sort of psychological warfare where the audience is sort of sitting there going, are they doing it for this? Why are they doing it? Or maybe it's because of that. There's a lot of unanswered questions that keep people talking. So I'd have him at the helm.
That's great.
Playing the, I've only got two castings and it would be the 18-year-old son and the father. Mm-hmm. Now, this could be recency bias because I've watched the film and we did an episode on it recently. But as the 18-year-old son, I'd have Jake Horowitz from The Vast of Night.
Yeah.
I think he's a lot older than you'd think. He's 31. But he's a young-looking bloke. Yeah, he's a young-looking dude. And I think he could, especially in 1950s, he could pass for a younger
He's already passed it.
Well, exactly.
He's already auditioned and got the job.
Yeah, you're hired. Son.
He's in the door.
Yeah.
I think he's got the script.
Yeah, so I see him as the 18-year-old lad that's sort of too far gone. And I think he just buys into what his family is selling. And now that his dad's sort of completely clocked out, he's ruling the roost, but he's not looking to change the ruling of that roost. They're still playing the game. They're still doing all these fucked up things.
Well, they even respect the opinion of a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
I agree with Lucy.
Yeah.
Madness.
Absolute madness. And I would love to see it. And as the father, I guess we see most of him. If he gets killed off fairly early into the film, most of him will be seeing him in flashbacks, just being really fucked up, a real tyrant. Like I'd have Michael Fassbender as the dad. There's a passing similarity looks wise between him and Jake Horowitz, and we saw a little different version of him in The Killer. I think watching someone cold. A lot more hoppy, but a lot more that coldness, but a lot more unhinged, really unstable. I'd like to see that. So Steven Soderbergh directing, Jake Horowitz as the 18-year-old lad, and Michael Fassbender as his mental dad, and I'd just simply call the film The Water Tower.
Oh.
Should we throw Daddy off the tower?
Well, he can't play the usual stick game, so I guess it's what he'd want.
I want to drown him.
No, we drowned your sister last month.
Oh.
We gotta do something different for dear father.
From Steven Soderbergh, director of Unsane, Side Effects, and Contagion.
Chief, you're gonna want to see this.
You telling me 10 kids gone missing from this place up on that hill, and no one knows about it? And now these kids are telling us they've been systematically killing their siblings. Is that what you're saying?
It's now my job to take over from dear father, to continue the legacy he started, and for one child to become the victor.
The Water Tower. Coming soon.